Welcome to Manager Tools. Case Study Interviews, Part 3. Here we go. Today's cast answers these questions. What is a case study interview? What kinds of questions are there in case study interviews? How can I prepare for a case study interview? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Guaranteed managerial success. Don't you wish it were easy? Unfortunately, there are no silver bullets for successful management. It requires effort on the part of the manager to be dedicated to being more effective. While at our conferences, we don't pass out any silver bullets. We'll absolutely share with you our proven concepts for getting results and retaining employees so that the efforts you make are not in vain. Join us for an effective manager conference by registering online at manager-tools.com/training. We'll share with you strategies for making all of your efforts count.
Okay, Mark, so last 2 weeks we've talked about what a case study interview is, and you had some guidance on that. And then we talked about quantitative assessments.
Right.
Which are fun. We talked about golf balls in a 747. So folks, if you missed how many golf balls will fit into a 747, you want to go back and listen to the previous cast. You do not want to miss that.
Yeah, it was good.
So now we're going to talk about the other type of case study interviews, which is the situational case assessments.
Yes.
And of course, there are several types of those.
Right. And we're talking about case interviews here, but this is associated with the inaugural case study cast, which we partner with Dan McGuire on. And just this last week, a couple of days ago, in fact, in Dallas, Dan and I presented the inaugural Manager Tools case study live. And we led the 29 people at the conference through a two-hour discussion of a particular business case and had a great deal of fun. And that will continue in the future for those of you who want to supplement your effective manager training with some case study experience, an important skill. Okay. So, Mike, you're right. There are several types of case interviews. I mean, in fact, when we say case interviews, people are surprised that quantitative stuff goes into the bucket of case interviews, but hopefully you'll be able to see why. The most common type of case interview is called candidate-led. We'll get into that one in detail, because if you can prepare for a candidate-led one, you're great for the others. There's also one called interviewer-led, where they tend to be more specific in skills in each of the phases of the interview. But interviewer-led is interesting because it's practiced by McKinsey, who invented all this stuff. And their hiring practices typically are bellwethers for the consulting industry, which drives a lot of the case study use in interviews. There are also presentation cases and written cases and group cases as well. We're going to focus on candidate-led assessments because the principles that you use in these are all the same, and it is more common candidate-led cases. The underlying principles of presentation and analysis and making decisions and getting data and so on are essentially the same. If we go through candidate-led and then at the end we say, oh, by the way, here are a couple of other variations on that, nobody will listen. So let's do the minor variations first, get them out of the way, and that will allow us to dig into a candidate-led case. Again, same type of business scenario could be used in a candidate-led, interviewer-led, written case, presentation case, group case, doesn't matter. In presentation cases, in interviews where they do that, you're given a whole bunch of charts and reports and spreadsheets and so on, maybe some write-ups, some transcripts of interviews of senior people or something, and you're given 1 or 2 hours to prepare a slide presentation, a slide deck, where you present your analysis and recommendations. Okay. Then after that, you're interviewed on your analysis and recommendations and the process you follow to get there. So unlike a candidate-led interview where you are essentially describing what you're doing and asking for data, in this case, they give you a ton of stuff and you have to pick and choose. And then you have to describe what you did after the fact. Same basic principles, just a different mode of conducting the interview. And for the record, the presentation obviously makes a difference. If your presentation is awesome, but your analysis is terrible, they're not hiring you primarily for your presentation skills. So that would be problematic. But I've heard from several folks who were consultants at well-known firms that will tell you that our guidance on slides and charts in our podcast, which is called Presentations, the Right Chart, completely match how business school and consulting firms recommend people put slides together. And it's always funny to hear that, like, wow, did you know? I'm like, yeah, well, that's where we learned it. I mean, we saw that happening. On the other hand, when we learned it, we realized, gosh, I've been wrong all these years about slides, that, you know, I'm captioning slides and making that the title, because a caption generally describes essentially what you're seeing, whereas a title of a slide tells you what conclusion you're supposed to draw. That's probably the single biggest difference in good slides and great slides. Bad slides, of course, have errors and have Excel spreadsheets on the slide with 80 lines and 20 columns. And oh, by the way, in cell, you know, A63, you'll notice, which is at 1.5 type, so small, nobody can read it. But that's okay because it's live. It's connected live to the actual database. Again, not an issue, not good. So that's a presentation case. Written cases, very similar to a presentation case in terms of the materials you're given that you have to analyze and synthesize and so on. But instead of presenting it, you will be given an exam, a written exam about the case. Then there's group cases where 3 to 4 candidates together are given a case problem to solve by the interviewer. Again, similar basic principles at work here, but in this case, the classic mistake to make would be to think that your fellow candidates are the enemy, that you're essentially being compared with them, which is true. You are being compared, but the standard is not that they're the enemy. The standard is, can you collaborate with other professionals in a way that you provide a lot of input and you also provide a lot of support and you also have good communication skills? You're expected to work as a team. You're expected to solve and present the case to the interviewer as a team. If you go through an entire group case and you never say something like, Rob's idea here was really instrumental, you're probably not getting strong marks as a team player. Mm-hmm. So being seen as supporting others' ideas and work is important. And by the way, the willingness to say, okay, Sarah, you do that because you're super good at that. I'm going to do this because this is one thing I'm really good at. And then after Sarah does it, you don't check her work. After Rob does his part, you don't say, oh, I did that in my spare time over here. I'm not sure I agree with you. Okay. You have to trust each other. You have to divide and conquer to some degree. And if, in fact, Rob's analysis is wrong, you don't throw him under the bus. Well, everything else we did was good, but Rob's presentation was bad because of his analysis bad, so hopefully you won't ding us for that. That would be the kiss of death in a group case interview. So in all of these cases, the same basic principles apply. Now, in an interviewer-led case, you have a situation where the interviewer says, okay, here's a situation. Tell me what you would do to come up with a rationale for how you're going to handle this. And you would say, well, I probably want to know this and this and this. And the interviewer would say, okay, I can tell you that. What would you do next? And you're essentially flying blind, talking through things, which is also very true for the candidate-led case. You have a bunch of data, but you can't see all of it. And each one of the sections is sort of independent of the other ones. When you come up with your initial idea, hypothesis, rough estimation of what you think the problem might be based on the initial data set, once you've done that, you'll be talked through how you got it. And then the interviewer will say, okay, you're right. And he or she will hand you a new set of data and say, okay, let's work through this a little bit more. Tell me what you do now, okay? And then you would say, well, I'd want this and this and this, and perhaps they'd give it to you if they had it. And even if your initial interview was wrong, they'd say, okay, you're a little off there, but don't worry about that. I don't want to have you continue to go down a wrong initial idea or hypothesis or point of view. So I'm going to tell you, here's what the actual first answer ought to be. So in other words, they have like circuit breakers throughout the scenario so that if you don't do part one well, you might still do parts 2, 3, and 4 well, and they then get to evaluate you on parts 2, 3, or 4. But in that case, you're going to be handed things at a certain time And again, they're trying to determine by not allowing you to work your way all the way through it based on some flawed assumptions in the beginning, how your skills are in each phase of the process. So now let's get to the one that everybody worries about, candidate-led cases. When you think about it, cases are just a narrowly specific form of a behavioral interview. You can't miss this, guys. If you've followed Manager Tools guidance before and you understand the concept of a behavioral interview, cases are just a behavioral interview for a particular type of job. That's all that is, okay? In a behavioral interview, companies are trying to imagine you doing the job they have open. In fact, consultant interviewers will say all the time, consulting firm and Wall Street firms that use this, they will say all the time, as I'm listening to somebody, is this the kind of person I want on my team? Some people, it clicks and you go, wow, this guy's, you know, she's good. She's sharp and she's communicating well. And I could see her being a colleague of mine. She's ready at a junior level to join us. And other people like, wow, this guy's super smart, but wow, is he annoying. And we don't let anybody come to work at our firm who might annoy a CEO of a $1 billion company. And probably you'll be exposed to those people if you're in a top five or more likely a top three strategy or management consulting firm. So they're trying to imagine you doing it. And because of the way the case is created, cases are, in a way, what you'll do. So the best predictor of your behaviors in their job is your behaviors in previous roles. That's the idea behind behavioral interviewing. Behavioral interview questions are crafted to give a candidate a chance to basically highlight or talk about behaviors that are needed in the role being sought. This is why preparation is so important if you're being interviewed for a job. And a behavioral interview is the technique they're using, which now is almost, you can almost assume it. A company that didn't use behavioral interviewing, it would surprise me, frankly, and I would frankly discount some of the things that I think the likelihood of them being effective. And I'll tell you something else. Artificial intelligence is being used more and more in interviewing. And what's funny about that is artificial intelligence, when the robot or when the AI is applied to you, guess what kind of questions they ask you? Behavioral interview questions. But here's the key here. Here's the connection. Case assessments are used because the work involved in a case closely matches consulting and strategic or analytical roles at large organizations and many banks and so on. A case interviewer is trying to picture you doing the job of a consultant or a staff analyst. So one of the most important principles in case assessments, and particularly in candidate-led assessments, is to present your work and answers to the interviewer as if he or she were your client. Because that's what they're trying to determine. Could they trust you if they were a client with the skills, knowledge, and communication skills you have? Or put slightly differently, if they were the lead on a particular engagement, could they trust you in front of a client with the skills, knowledge, and communication abilities you have? If you think about a behavioral interview again, I'm just not sure there's a better simulacrum than a case interview. If you believe in behavioral interviewing and you ran a consulting firm, you'd end up doing case interviewing after you tried everything else and tallied up your success at predicting candidates' future performance. Now, here's where it gets interesting. And actually, I talked about this with the Dallas group when we did the live case study, because they had just sat through 8 hours of effective manager training. I think it's eight. No, it's nine. 9 hours, 8 to 5. And I told them, I said, guys, for many of you, just because of the way you were raised and schooled and so on, learning is a fairly passive thing, which is one of the reasons why Manager Tools at our conferences has practice to make it active, because the adult learning model is you learn by doing. And at 5 o'clock, 5:30, generally most people are pretty tired at the end of one of our training days. At 5:30, I told them, I said, guys, you cannot sit there and expect us to teach you how to do a case. That's not what we're here to do. You're going to do a case and you're going to feel uncomfortable. You're not going to know if this is the right thing. And I said, this is not a teacher teaching you. This is you engaging in a behavior And us giving you some parameters and some bumpers and some small helps over some hedgerows and so on, you're not trying to get the answer in front of a teacher. Your work in a case interview, even if it's right, won't be considered effective or a good answer or move you to the next stage if you answer with, well, I'm pretty sure that this is what you're looking for, right?
Yeah, because that's what clients want to hear, right, when you're in front of a client.
Yeah. The reason we're talking about this in terms of the theory behind case interviews is oftentimes people's mistake in interviewing is thinking that there is a right answer, when in fact there's not. There's your answer, and they're going to evaluate your answer against the criteria that they have. But part of the right answer in a good behavioral interview, or in this case, more specifically, a candidate-led case interview, is you have to speak to them in a way that makes them believe that they could be confident putting you in front of a client. So you would never speak to a client by saying, I think this is what you want. The client would say, why am I paying you? I can pay junior analysts to give me raw data and draw a conclusion and say, maybe this is it? I don't know. And let me give you an example of this. A friend of ours was a consultant for one of the top consulting firms, Bain Consulting. He was, within his first year on the job, asked to go to Detroit as the first person to travel of a team. I think it's 2 or 3 or 4 person team or whatever. And he was told this: should this client outsource or digitize their human resources personnel administration? Right? There are a lot of organizations that have HR, and what they're trying to do, and often many cases for compensation and benefits and legal and all kinds of compliance things, they're outsourcing that, making it systematized and digitized so that HR can focus on more organization building, talent retention, talent growth kinds of decisions.
So we asked that and got given probably a couple folders just chock full of information about the client and what they were doing, how they're doing human resources, all their processes.
Yeah. What's this guy's in Chicago and he could study on the plane on the way to Detroit or something? No. That's all he was told.
That's it.
Now, the partner who had landed the business actually knows a little bit more about it, but he's not going to download, or she's not going to download everything they know about the client relationship. This may be a small part of a 5-year engagement for this company to totally transform, cut out costs, change the way they hire, make them more nimble, all those senses, all those buzzwords that everybody likes. It turns out he was the only team member that went, staying at the client site for about 4 weeks before other people joined him. His boss came in once a week initially. He flew in and flew out the same day, the boss did. So it's not like they got 2 hours over dinner one night to talk about the details of the case. And over time, because our friend's a pretty smart guy, because he did well, his boss came in only once a month. And I have to tell you guys, I remember hearing this story, and what flashed into my head, for those of you who are longtime listeners of Manager Tools, you'll appreciate this reference, was the famous turn of the century, and by that I mean from the 19th to the 20th century, story, which is available, widely available now, and you can download it, I'm sure, called A Message to Garcia. They basically gave him a satchel. He put it over his shoulder, and he went and took a message to Garcia. Now, think about that for a minute, though. Should they outsource or not, right? He'd have to know what data to ask for. Look, you can't just ask for all their data. That's called boiling the ocean, because if you ask for all the data, they assume that you're going to use all the data. To use all the data, you have to analyze all the data. And if you ask for all the data, the client assumes that you will be spending consultant-level dollars on analyzing all that data. They don't pay you for that. Anybody could do that, and it'll take too long, and the engagement will be too expensive. So your job will be to know enough to schedule the right initial interviews to determine what various factors might exist. You would then create an initial idea, a hypothesis, and a general approach. In your head, you would probably say something like, I think I'm going to recommend yes. And then I think there are these factors. And then you would drill down through all those factors in order to be able to support your initial idea, or to realize, oh, I was wrong. Let's go back up a level. My framework for this proved that my initial idea was wrong. It's the opposite, or it's something slightly different based on my analysis. But the initial idea actually helps you not have to boil the ocean. And if you've heard it before, the idea is if you need a cup of boiling water, there are two ways to do it. The right cup of boiling water. You can boil the ocean and then take a cup. And that takes a long time. It's expensive. It's energy intensive. Or you can know what part of the ocean is the right part, take that part, and then boil it. And you're fine. It's the same result. But one requires intelligence, insight, the ability to pick carefully through maybe four or five cups before you find the one cup. So in addition, then, this consultant who's there on his own has to know who to go talk to, how to get on their schedule. I mean, you don't just walk in and say, I want this and that and the other thing. You're not in charge of the organization. The organization's like, yeah, I'll see you tomorrow at 8:30 for half an hour when I have a free minute. If you're talking to the VP of HR, it's not like he or she has a bunch of free time sitting around waiting for you, just waiting for you, Mr. Consultant.
Yeah, and he or she is probably really excited about talking to you.
Oh, yeah. Outsourcing. Please let's make my kingdom smaller, my fiefdom less powerful. That'd be good. So a lot of that is having good enough communication and relationship skills to ask people in a way that doesn't come across as an order from some new and or younger consultant or suit. You have to know who to ask. You have to know what to ask for. And then you have to know how to analyze it. And then you have to communicate it. What that means is that candidates have to be able to combine several different activities to be effective to prove to an interviewer that they could be a consultant or an analyst. You not only need to know what data to look at and ask for, you also need to know how to see it and how to analyze it. You need to determine each datum's weight towards a recommendation. You need to present and communicate about your recommendation, which is exactly what a case interview tests. It's perfect.
No wonder they do these.
Yeah. So because of this, all this, candidate-led cases are probably the best approximation of the situation consultants and analysts find themselves in. You're faced with having to make a decision or solve a problem. You have to form some sort of idea about what might be the cause of it. And guys, obviously, as you might imagine, you'll get better at doing this by doing it more often. The whole key to case interviews, killing them, is practice. Practice over and over again, and not reading cases and seeing what the person came up with. That kind of passive knowledge is really dangerous. You have to look at a case and try to solve it and go through the misery. The other night in Dallas, we had a famous case, XYZ Airlines, and at one point they were kind of stalled. I said, guys, some of you, I could see it. You have ideas, but you're thinking right now you need to know the answer. You don't need to know the answer. You need to know the next question to ask. And if you're thinking, I don't know, you don't know. You're not supposed to know. Knowing is not what you're paid to do. Asking is what you're paid to do to help you to get to know more. And ideally, you'll ask only for the right things, and you'll have to know less at the same time realizing that you know the most important stuff. Again, though, in a case, you're given almost no information. Most people's experience the first few times they get a case is the combination of the question they get asked and the amount of data they get initially, the gap is enormous. You know, should we close our South American manufacturing operations? Holy, are you kidding? That's a big question. And by the way, here's some charts. I mean, four or five charts. Dude, here's some twine, a small piece of a pencil eraser, a paper clip, and some wood shavings. I need you to build me a boat. What? I'm sorry that, you know, the magnitude of the difference between the solution and the givens is massive. But that's what consultants are expected to do.
20 years from now, we'll call this the MacGyver cast, right?
Exactly. There you go. If you're thinking that you wouldn't know where to begin, as you hear us talk about this, guys, if an executive said to you, hey, our costs are up 10%, and my boss, the CEO, is saying, I got to raise my division's profits. If somebody said that to you and you wouldn't know what to do or where to begin, guys, you're normal, okay? No one expects you to know what the answer is, let alone right now, before you've been taught this technique, how to get there, okay? But these are the kinds of problems that are taught over and over again in business schools. If you haven't been asked these types of questions because you're a first-line manager, second-line manager, third-line manager, and you generally don't get involved in business decisions, which, by the way, business decisions are what people think of as management. We here at Manager Tools think of management as a people thing. And if you haven't been asked whether or not somebody should outsource personnel administration, or should we invest $90 million in South America or EMEA, or should we outsource manufacturing to China or Mexico or Korea, your job doesn't require that. It's okay. And most companies, guys, do not formally teach this stuff. This is basically strategic business decision-making. That's what it is. By the way, as an aside, I'm going to predict here that in the next 20 years, some companies will start teaching this stuff. There will be professional development programs. Now, there are some high potential programs where people come in and present cases, but they don't really teach them the frameworks and so on in the high potential thing. They use it as almost an entertainment value, but they also want to stretch the managers, the senior managers, if you will, who have been identified as potential senior executives at someday. But I really believe that in the next 20 years, companies are going to start teaching this stuff pretty directly, frankly, because of demographics and because of the benefit of competitive advantage. I think we're going to see more and more companies get involved in education. And by that, I mean, like, I know this sounds terrible. People are going to lose their minds buying universities or colleges, or funding them significantly and making sure that business decision making is a fundamental part of the curriculum. By the way, guys, don't lose your mind. It's okay if that upsets you. Your kids don't have to go there. There are some kids who want to, just like there are schools for music. It would make no sense for me to go to Juilliard, let alone the fact that I can't get in. But companies need this, and they need junior people starting to think about this stuff before they become senior people, because you don't want to solve a problem in real time the first time you're having to do one like that.
Yeah. I did this back, many years ago, back at Mobile. One of the case studies we went through was, believe it or not, Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
That's all I remember about it, by the way.
But do you remember the experience of holy moly?
Oh, yeah. It was. The first time you go through it, you go like, oh, my God, I don't know anything.
Yeah. That's why the key to candidate-led cases or, case interviewing and behavioral interviewing is practice. I get emails all the time. Says, I practiced, and I kind of didn't like it for a behavioral interview. And I got 5 offers. Mark, you won't believe it. I got 5 offers. Why wouldn't I believe it? And I'll tell you something else. Why aren't there more stories of 10 mid-level managers at a big company getting together and saying, there's some stuff done a level or two above us that none of us do? I suspect we could probably cobble together the beginnings of some sort of program that we could learn these tools and practice them in a study group over the course of the next year and really enhance our chances of promotion. And frankly, it may make us more competitive against some of these young MBAs we see getting some of the jobs that we know have an asterisk by them on the org chart, indicating those are key stepping stones to strategic or executive leadership around here.
No, don't do that. That would be too proactive. That's just
yeah. And, people say to me, then I have to, And look, that probably happens. It gets thrown out in a bar one Friday evening, right? After you're nursing your pain because somebody else got the promotion. Thinking like, oh, that's not the way things happen. Guys, I'll never forget, this is 25 years ago, driving by the garage. A garage. I mean, it's a garage. It's a place where you park cars at a house in Silicon Valley where Bill Hewlett and Dave Packard started Hewlett Packard, which now I think makes probably $50 billion every year. But the building they started in was just a garage when they started it. That's how these things start. Okay, enough. The knowledge that it takes to handle cases is not some insight that McKinsey and Bain and BCG folks develop on their own, although it can be. There are CEOs of huge companies today with barely a high school education. Gates and Zuckerberg did not graduate from Harvard, even though they may have honorary degrees. And when they were growing their companies, they didn't use the case framework to analyze options and make decisions. However, if you're going to go in a particular area of the business world, in consulting and banking and so on, you have to know how to do this. But even if you don't go into that area, this is essentially a part of the business decision-making skill set that separates some managers from some executives. So it's worth paying attention to. So look, in a candidate-led case, you're given basically no information initially. Generally, what happens is you're presented a short question. Should client X close down their South American operations? We're losing $100 million annually in this product line. Should we fix it or sell it? And that's it. You're given no supportive documentation or no written overview of recent history of the problems. And it's called a candidate-led interview because the interviewer is passively assessing how you would approach a situation like this, like being asked to fly to Detroit. And what would you do at the client site? You aren't told where to look, whom to talk to, where the secrets are buried at all. And the first thing you do is panic. And guys, that's normal. Okay. Don't worry about it.
All right, Mark. So that's great background on, you know, case interviews and what they are. And I think the next thing we want to talk about is what the approach is. So let's end this cast here. I think it's a great stopping point. And we'll pick up with what the kind of basic phased approach for handling case interviews is next week. Thanks, everyone. Have a great one. So long.